Okay.
grandparents on them.
What? Yeah, okay, but I trust that there are hundreds of people watching. Okay, so let's get started. So we have right. We're going to start with Parsha as always. As many of you know, because I mention it from time to time, I enjoy reading rabbinic biographies. I find it very relaxing and often very inspiring and very educational also. And one thing about every good biography, rabbinic or otherwise, is that if you want to really understand the person and you want to understand why they're important, you have to understand where they came from, and you have to understand the legacy that they left behind. You have to understand the previous generation and the generations that followed. That's clear and obvious, you know, to know who shaped them and to consider their legacy and the messages that they imparted to their offspring. So for example, I'm a grandchild of Holocaust survivors. I assume most of you are great-grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, if not grandchildren of Holocaust survivors. People whose emuna, resilience, and courage have never been matched probably in all of human history. And the very many Torah and Chesed accomplishments that we see in the United States in the end of the 20th century, beginning of the 21st century, is a direct tribute to them. You know, I remember last year at this time when I was they just had the yard site for Rav Moshe Weiminger's father. So I saw on Twitter they had like some footage of some of the Maimed. So I remember being Menachem Mevel, Rav Weiminger, and just listening to him talk, you know, about his parents. It's just you see where Rav Moshe Weiminger comes from. Meaning, just hearing about what it means to grow up with such parents of such emuna, such, you know, who not only went through the Holocaust but went through with their emuna intact and with their priorities being what they were. So when discussing Moshe Rabbeinu, it's important for us to see how the Torah describes his own interaction with the generations prior, and meaning his parents, in-laws, or whatever, and with the generations that follow. So we're not going to do a thorough analysis over here, but just two questions. It's just an introduction. The generation above him, parents, we're going to leave out of the question now, because this week is Parshas Yisro. It's about the father-in-law. Moshe Rabbeinu goes to greet Yisro. And the Torah tells us, "Vayetze Moshe lekros chosno, vayishachlu, vayishaklo, vayishalu ish l're'ehu l'shalom, vayavohu ha'ohela." And the Targum Yonasan translates, "Vayavohu ha'ohela, va'asu l'mishkan beis ulpana." That Moshe brought him to the base medrash. It's an unusual stop. You know, someone comes to visit family, and the first place you bring him is to the base medrash. You know, it's not even like a flex of being such a ben Torah that you know, to show that, look, this is where we go right away before I offer you a coffee or anything. Rav Yerucham Olshin quoted that from Rav Elchanan Hertzman, I'm not sure who that was, who said that when he was a bacher, he went to Grodno in the hopes of learning by Rav Shimon Shkap. So he went and he knocked on Rav Shimon's door, and he wanted to talk and learning immediately. He was very excited to be able to connect with Rav Shimon Shkap, and Rav Shimon wouldn't talk to him in learning until he agreed to sit down, eat something, and rest a little bit. Why? Because that's Hachnas Sarchan. That's how you treat a guest. If someone comes, you don't right away talk to them in learning and schlep them to the base of Medrash. You treat a guest by sitting down and making sure that they eat something. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu not give Yisro a chance to rest a little bit? Why is it, according to the Targum Yonasan, that he brings him straight to the base of Medrash? And second of all, let's look down the generations. Moshe Rabbeinu relates to the generation beneath him through his own life experiences, meaning he sees through his children, he sees what he's gone through in life, which is not unusual. A lot of people live vicariously through their children, which is probably not the healthiest thing in the world. A lot of people find a lot of their own insecurities manifest in their children, and that's why they get very emotional about it. I was just talking to one of the Rebbeim in Yeshiva today. He was telling me, he said, "I have such a gift to read people." He said, "I really understand people, and I have patience with people." When I say people, I mean everyone except my own children. because there's like this tremendous emotional connection that clouds judgment a little bit, and you're really seeing your own you know, any perceived failure you see as your own failure, but or success as your own success. So Moshe Rabbeinu relates to the generation beneath him, and the pasuk says, "Veshnei b'nei asher b'nei asher shema b'neha asher shema echad gershom ki amar gera yisi beretz nachgria v'shema echad Eliezer ki elokei avi be'ezri ve'etzileni micherav paro." That he named one child after his experience of Gera Yisi Beretz Nachria, being a stranger, and the other one after being Hashem's help in saving him after he had killed the Mitzri. Ve'atzileni Micherav Paro, he was a fugitive, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved him. So certainly the second one, experiencing a great salvation, is something worthy of memorializing in the name of a child. Why would the first part be something worth memorializing in the name of a child? Ki ger hayisi be'eretz nachriya? Because I was a ger be'eretz nachriya, that's what you're going to name the child? That's going to be what that child is stuck with? That I remind my father that he was in galus? That's what you want him to walk around with? Furthermore, it seems out of order, because Moshe was not really a ger in Mitzrayim. Meaning, maybe the rest of Klal Yisrael was. Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in the palace. I mean, you can't really be much more of someone who belongs than someone who's brought up by royalty in the palace. His Eretz Nachriya was really Midian. That's where he was a foreign resident. So if he's referring to his time in Midian, then it's out of order. You know, why didn't he name the first child after his escape from Mitzrayim, and the second child after his exile from Mitzrayim? So Rav Yerucham Olshan quotes a yesod from Rav Shach that sheds light on all these questions. I don't know if you guys have learned much of Rav Yerucham Olshan's Hashkafa. You know, his pieces on Lamdus are very, very beautiful. His pieces on Hashkafa are also very beautiful, and he has very good Marim Mekomos. But you know, and you can usually predict what the message is going to be. Sometimes you'll have a Rav or a Shiva will speak about Shiduchim one time, and we'll speak about Midos Tavos, and we'll speak about Anivos, and we'll speak about Talmud Torah, and we'll speak about Chesed, and we'll speak about Rav Yerucham Olshan, and this is the Lakewood way. It's always about Torah, right? Torah isn't the greatest thing, it's the only thing, right? To paraphrase the great coach or whatever, right? Torah is the only, Talmud Torah is everything. So, true to form, Rav Yerucham Olshan quotes a yesod from Rav Shach that sheds light on this. The Pasuk in Parshas Kisisa describes the aftermath of the Chedei Egel. Hashem says, "Hinei Anochi Koreis Bris Neged Kol Amcha Esen Niflaos Asher Lo Nivru B'Chol Aretz V'Chol Hagoyim." It's an unusual pasuk because I don't think people often like realize what's going on over here. Hashem tells us after the Chedei Egel, "Esen Niflaos, I'm going to make miracles, the likes of which Lo Nivru B'Chol Aretz V'Chol Hagoyim. No one's ever seen miracles the likes of which I'm going to make. Never in human history." Problem is, Esrei Makos already happened. Kriyas Yam Suf already happened. What Nifla'os is he talking about? Meaning the Nifla'os already happened. We don't have a clear record of any great miracle that followed that declaration. So what exactly is the miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referring to? That he's gonna, and that's the only, you know, that's a promise of Niflaos that dwarf all the others. So Rav Shach answered, it's an astonishing answer, hard to imagine it's pshat in the pasuk, but Rav Shach's answer is the following. He answered based on what Rav Yaakov Emden writes in his introduction to his Siddur. Rav Yaakov Emden comments on how amazing it is that Klal Yisrael is still around and still Davik Vashem. That there is still such a thing as a frum Jew today. That there are still Shomrei Torah mitzvahs. There are still people that are connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah in its entirety, every nikud, every os, is fully intact. And not only intact, but it's the subject of the attention of thousands of lomdim throughout the world. That every detail of Torah, we're continued to study exactly as it was. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes that when you consider that Chei Nafshi, Kibis bonani b'neflos eila godlu etzli yoser mikol nisim b'neflos shas Hashem yisbarach lavaseinu b'mitzrayim u b'midbar u b'eretz Yisrael. Rav Yaakov Emden said, if you want to know what's the greatest miracle in the history of the Jewish people, the greatest miracle in the history of the Jewish people that Hashem has ever done for the Jewish people is the fact that the Torah continues to survive and we're still connected to it. It dwarfs the miracles of the Eser Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf and everything else that ever happened to us, all the miracles in the Mikdash that happened all the time. It dwarfs all of those miracles. It is the greatest miracle in history. It's always tricky, right? How do you define what's the greatest miracle? Miracles are like so beyond our imagination. I remember once when Mendel Blachman spoke in my house. He was trying to recruit DRS seniors to Karen Biavna. So he gave a shiur in my house. And he started the shiur by saying, what's the greatest miracle, the most amazing nace that ever happened? So he titled it, was that Mako Ma'aron Eilam Min Amida. That if you measure the Kodesh Kedashim, that right, so if you measure on each side of the Aron and then you measure wall to wall, so it's the same measurement, that the Aron didn't take up any space. So why is that greater than Kriyas Yamsuf? He says, because imagine what Kriyas Yamsuf looks like. Okay, in your mind's eye, you could imagine, water splits, people go through. Imagine what Makom Aron, draw a diagram in your mind of Makom Aron Einam Min Amida. So he said, we can't even envision a miracle like that. Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, forget Makom Aron Einam Min Amida, the greatest miracle that ever happened in the history of the Jewish people, the greatest is the history of the Jewish people, is the fact that there are Jewish people that are still connected to the Torah HaKadosh. And Rav Shach explained that that's the miracle HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised after all the miracles were over. And the pasuk is referring to the survival of the Jewish people, but particularly our relationship to Torah Hashem. And based on that, maybe we can answer the questions. Yisro joins the Jewish people. He does so because he heard of all the great miracles. Mashvu, Shamu, Uba, right? He heard about everything. Melchemes Amalek, Kriyas Yamsuf, whatever it was that he heard, that he was inspired by. Moshe immediately says, no, that's not the greatest miracle. Come with me to the Beis Medrash. And that's what, then you'll see what's really worth coming for. If you're a person who's nispoil from Nisim, be nispoil from the greatest Nes. And that he goes to the Beis Medrash. When Moshe Rabbeinu names his children, he recognizes the importance of being a ger. Even before he goes to Midian, he's already a ger. Yeah, he's a prince of Egypt, born in Egypt, right? That was the name of the Spielberg cartoon about Moshe Rabbeinu. He was a prince of Egypt. So he was born in Egypt, raised in Paro's house, but he's still a ger. And why is he a ger? Because the Jewish people are not natives to any country that we're born in. We never were. That's not who we are. Our entire lives are thinking about Sion, are thinking about Yerushalayim, are thinking about our connection. And where does that come from? That koach comes from our connection to Torah. We're natives to our traditions. That's what we're natives to. We're natives to our mitzvahs. We're natives to the Ribono Shel Olam and his plan for us, the destiny that we're supposed to have. Everything is external. Everything else is something that's external to our identity. And Moshe, in fact, was a ger before he was saved from Paro. He lived his entire life as a ger be'eretz Nachriya. A Jew is a piece of Torah Hashem. That's why is it worth naming a child for? That's exactly what you want to name a child for. That this is what you are. You're a Jew. Wherever you may be, you will always be a ger because you are a Jew. You're only native. You're only a native to the Ribono Shel Olam and his Torah. Every year, except this year, I go to Eretz Yisrael once or twice a year, as many of us do probably. And there was like a solid, like probably 10-12 years where I didn't go, pretty much, because when the kids were young and I didn't have anyone sending me, the yeshiva wasn't sending me or whatever. So, but then at a certain point, Baruch Hashem, I was able to sort of build that into my jobs that I have to go to. So one of the highlights is always visiting my grandfather Shlita, and he's not the most patient man in the world. He doesn't have long conversations usually. He has a lot to do always. There's a lot of, I think he finishes Tehillim like every day and like Shisha Sidrei Mishnah every month. Like he's got his chovos that he's got to or something like that. I don't know if it's every month, but it's probably is. I don't know. I don't know exactly the schedule and the Daf Yomi or whatever. The Ein Yaakov Shir and everything else. He's got his plans. He's always it's normally a short conversation, but he always takes time to remind me of the importance of making sure that you're kavua each and every day in learning and davening. no matter how in the mood you are to learn, no matter how much it hurts, no matter how sick you are, no matter, he said, there are always excuses. He told me last year, he said, I'm 92, I think he said he's 93, I don't know, whatever he is, he's 90 something. He's like, you don't think it hurts? It always hurts. It always, everything always hurts. He said, there's no reason to ever do anything, but you do it anyway. And one thing he said to me, like, it was probably the most inspiring thing I've ever heard in my entire life from anybody, and, you know, I do look for inspiring things from people, that's sort of like what I do for a living, and probably the most inspiring thing I've ever heard from anybody is he told me that he was reflecting on the family that he built, and children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, now Baruch Hashem, two great-great-grandchildren, and all Shomrei Torah mitzvahs, and he said to me, I would go through 10 Auschwitzes if that's what I had to do in order to see that, in order to see that nachas. I don't know what that means exactly, but even just the terminology that you use, you know, I would pay $1 million, I would sacrifice my house, I'd sacrifice my car. Like when we talk about like what we would give up, we don't even know what Mesiris Nefesh is, right? This is it's to go through the depths of Gehenna to ensure the continuation of the greatest miracle that ever existed, the miracle of the absolute dedication of the Jewish people to Torah Hashem, and that's our challenge. That's every generation's challenge. But our challenge is to keep that miracle going, because unlike other miracles, which are purely in the hand of the Ribono Shel Olam, this is a miracle that we actually get to perform. Rav Asher Weiss remarked. Once, I thought it was such a fantastic remark. He said that it's never been as easy as it is nowadays to be a Talmud Chacham. Right? You could do an 8-minute daf yomi. You could finish Shas in like a day. Right? I mean, you have access to everything. World class Talmidei Chacham you can find just clicking around, and you could hear a shir from who knows, you know, from these great gedolim and Talmidei Chacham. You have access to every sefer that's ever been in Hebrew books, you know, however many hundreds of thousands of titles, any sefer that you could ever want. You have access to everything. It's never been easier to be a Talmud Chacham, even if you're just a beginner and you need help and handholding. There's so many resources that help a person. But he said, it's never been harder to want to be a Talmud Chacham. Meaning the world is so scattered. There are so many things that are so enticing that distract our attention, and there are so many things that are appealing that it distracts us from our essential goal of connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam and His Torah. And you know, imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu offers a Kriyas Yam Suf, and people say, no, thank you. My Twitter feed is blowing up right now, so I just need to see how many likes I got. You know, I'll handle Kriyas Yam Suf later. Or, you know, it's just the number of distractions that we have that take us away from what is essentially the greatest miracle in the history of the world. And sometimes we're too eager, not eager, but we don't realize what's right in front of us. We don't realize how great a miracle this is that we have the opportunity to participate in. You know, I think particularly, not to make anyone feel bad wherever they may be, but particularly to the chevra that's back in yeshiva, it's important to be here. Meaning, I know context matters a lot in terms of where you're learning, because just simply because of the distractions. The ability to focus on what you're really trying to do, on what you're really trying to learn, it's a different ball game. It's completely different. And, you know, we sometimes talk about one of the happy side effects of Corona is that we never have to cancel shiur again, no matter how, it could be 18 feet of snow, just get on the Zoom and it's no problem. And we took advantage of that this week, certainly. Right, that we can, you know, you'll always have access, and that's great. But there's a tremendous downside to that convenience, and the downside to that convenience is that we take advantage of it. And I'm speaking to myself more than anybody else. That we take advantage of it more than we otherwise would. In a normal year, I'll speak to myself. In a normal year, I never would go, just because my family's going to Florida for winter vacation. I never would have gone along with them. I have to say, sheer, how am I going to go to winter vacation? I don't have a vacation. I can't just go winter vacation. I never would have done it, right? And it's so easy. You could just get on the Zoom, and with palm trees in the background, you can say sheer. It's like, you know, it's so easy to do. It, but it's qualitatively different. The whole experience is qualitatively different. We have the opportunity to participate in the greatest miracle in the history of mankind, meaning appreciate what we lost this week. You know, appreciate when I spoke to Rabbi Shai Schechter on Sunday morning. I guess it was Sunday morning. It was before we heard of Rabbi Tursky passing away. We had just heard the news about Rabbi Shiner, Rabbi Salvechik first and Rabbi Shiner. And he said, it's 200 years of Amelus B'Torah. But that's what it is. Meaning, that's what we're talking about when we talk about Gedolim. We're not talking about accomplishments in other areas and doing this and doing that. It's 200 years of Amelus B'Torah. And that's what makes a Gedol. It's Amelus B'Torah. It's being focused on being a part of that greatest miracle in the history of the world, which Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes is the existence of the Jewish people and our continued connection to Torah Hashem. So we should always be mechazik ourselves to continue to participate in that wonderful miracle.